Good evening. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse. And this evening on our Lehigh Valley Discourse show, we have brought back one of our best guests every year. And it's not March. It is April. But Carmen Twilley Ambar, who is president of Cedar Crest College, is joining us to give us a recap tonight on what's been happening the past year and what's going forward in its 150th year. Carmen, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'd like to give our listeners just a little bit of knowledge. As I said, this marks the 150th year of Cedar Crest College, which is a private liberal arts college in Allentown, and what I think is becoming a leading-edge educational institution both in undergraduate and graduate programs. They have just completed their next strategic plan, which Carmen will share with us, and they continue to be a inspiration to other private colleges, especially women colleges throughout the country.
No, I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about the fact that we've been able to keep our historic mission, even as all colleges have been dealing with the changing landscape of higher education. And I think we've had some tremendous successes, not so much about my time there, but about the faculty and staff and students who've been committed to this good work.
Yes, and you know, you keep on getting recognized. U.S. News and World Report keeps recognizing Cedar Crest for being one of the top values and best regional colleges in the area. That's terrific. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. I mean, we really value the portion of that recognition that says that we are a best value. And what I say to prospective parents and students all the time is that, you know, that for us means that the investment that you make in this institution and in your educational experience, that you get a lot of value for that. And many of the initiatives that we've talked about over the years, Sally, have been about demonstrating that value. That's what the Sophomore Expedition is about, where we fund students to study abroad. That's what our four-year guarantee is about. It's about saying to parents that we know it's expensive. We want this to be worth your investment, and we want you to get value from this experience, not just personal value, but actual tangible value that you can point to.
Right. And as you indicated before the show started, you are transitioning the campus, the face of the campus, with both U.S. students and international students, which has been part of your goal as well.
Well, I think, you know, we have started talking about the internationalization of our campus. And so during my time at Cedar Crest, we've gone from 1% international students to 11% international students from 25 countries around the world. And it's for two reasons. We want our students to lead the world. And you can't lead the world unless you see the world. And some ways to see the world is to travel. But another way to see the world is by talking with people who are not like you from other countries and having that sort of intimate, dedicated time in courses and in student affairs events to talk about the experience that they're having. And so having our internationalists on campus has been a big part of internationalization. And we're really excited about the growth we've had in that area. And we are focused on a variety of countries because we think it's important for our students to engage with people who are not like them.
Well, and last year, if I recall correctly, last March, you had indicated that you were heading over to India. And I'm not sure what level of trip that was as far as Cedar Crest being there, but how did that turn out?
It was fantastic. So we are now maybe on our fourth or fifth trip to India. We've sent teams of faculty members there. So we're sending another group of faculty next week. And what we've done is we've gone into a variety of schools that we believe would be the right institutions to connect with Cedar Crest in terms of seniors coming to Cedar Crest College. And we've been focused on the STEM fields in particular. I'm doing hands-on science experiments. One of the things that's interesting about India is that they have a British system of education. It's very much a lecture form. It's not hands-on and experiential in the same way that we have here in this country. So one of the things that's been really fascinating for them is to be asked to be fully engaged in the experiment themselves and to do that core work. And they've been really excited about the different type of educational system. We believe that the women's college piece and our commitment to STEM fields will make Cedar Crest really attractive to young women in India.
Okay. And that's just one of the countries that you're featuring. You have a relationship with a college in China, correct?
We have. We're working in China. We also have a relationship with Seoul Women's University in Korea. And so we have an exchange program there. We're connected with Linnaeus University in Sweden. We have a relationship with the University of Suncoast in Australia. We have a significant number of students from Saudi Arabia. We have just really tried to expand the scope of what it means to be at Cedar Crest because we believe this is important, not only for international students, but for our domestic students. We all know the world has gotten smaller. And you know, this world is not going to be able to engage in the ways that I know we all hope it will if we don't understand each other better and can relate to each other in different ways. And being in a classroom with someone who is from Saudi Arabia or from Jaipur, India, really makes a difference for our students in terms of the academic experience they get.
Sure, sure. Getting a different trend of thought, right. Getting different customs and culture to understand.
Right. And some of internationalization, frankly, is working with our faculty about what does it mean to have a classroom where everyone's not from Pittsburgh and Allentown. What does it mean to have international students? And how do you teach your course differently when you can't make the same assumptions about what people
Correct.
Know
Yes.
or what people think is important or value systems? But I think that's important for all of us. As we go into the workforce, our workforce is now globalized. We're working with different people from different places, from different cultural perspectives, and being able to have cultural competence. One of the things I say to our students all the time is an important skill.
Well, and that becomes even more important as you think about some of the remote worker activities, because you may be connecting with somebody over the phone or over the internet that is a team member,
right.
but in a different culture, different
Absolutely.
Society.
And I think that when I talk to employers, and you know, we talk about what type of skill sets are they want our students to have. Yes, critical thinking, of course, writing skills, team building skills, right? Being able to right. collaborate with people, and cultural competency skills, communication skills. Those are the skills they talk about. And if you put students together in teams that are from not just different regions in this country, but different regions around the world, and ask them to work on a project together, the learning that happens, not just disciplinarily in the subject matter, but how you work with someone who has different assumptions about how the world works, how our projects should work together, helps you grow and helps you be better prepared for that first job and even for that 10th job.
Oh, wow. That's, I think a lot of people who are already employed should be able to get engaged in those lessons as well.
All of us would be better off if we had more opportunities to engage with people who aren't like us.
Yeah. Now, while we're talking international, let's talk about the sophomore trip.
Oh, gosh. I'm so excited about this. You've heard me say this before, Sally. When I first came to interview at Cedar Crest, I talked about this idea. And so the fact that we are now doing this is just, I cannot tell you how elated I am about it. So the sophomore expedition is part of our new sophomore year experience. It's part of our new strategic plan. So there are a lot of elements to the sophomore year experience, but the big piece of it is the sophomore expedition. And the sophomore expedition is a fully funded trip by the college for all of our sophomores. So all they have to do is to get their passport. They have to pay that little fee to do that. But beyond that, all the other expenses are covered. The entire sophomore class will take a series of seminar courses in the spring of their sophomore year, hopefully focused around their area of interest. So if you're interested in criminal justice, you'll be doing something around that. If you're interested in environmental issues, you'll be taking a course associated with that. And then during spring break for 7 to 10 days, we will go and be of service in a particular country. So I announced the destination for this class. They're going to be going to Rio de Janeiro. And there were, not only was I videotaped and put on Snapchat and all the things that our students do, but they were just squeals of delight to be able to have this opportunity. And I would encourage everyone to keep track of us, because in August, I will announce the next destination. Okay. So every year, each sophomore class will go to a different destination. And so we already have the destination. We keep it very tight at Cedar Crest, so only about 4 people on campus know that destination. So everybody is surprised. And as I've said to prospective parents and to prospective students, don't be upset with the Rio people, because the place that these guys are going next year is equally as fantastic.
Well, I just think the opportunity. Many of your students are still first child to go to college, correct?
Right. So we have 44% of our students are first-generation college students. So this was about, I mean, I think this is about a fundamental principle that we have established at Cedar Crest, which is about how do you create opt-in experiences. So one of the things about that best value designation by U.S. News and World Report is that if only a few students can participate in it, it doesn't really add value to everyone. And so one of the things that can happen on college campuses, and I would encourage anyone who has their child looking around at colleges, when they tell you about the wonderful experiences that are happening on their campus, ask some questions about how many students participate. Ask some questions about cost. Ask some questions about how expansive the opportunities are. Because if the experience is not one that a lot of people on campus can participate in, it's not really that much of a value value to you. So we have been saying it has to be opt-in. It has to be something that everybody can do. So our sophomore expedition, we got a $4 million gift. We've been creating operational surplus at Cedar Crest, so we put away some money for this, this endowment of this experience. And then here are the requirements. It's minimal, right? It is, you have to have, be in good academic standing, which is a minimum of a 2.5. So you should be making a 2.5.
Right,
okay, come
be.
On. Yeah. We want you to be in good judicial standing. So okay. You should not have any judicial things going on. That's a reasonable request. And we want you to be in good financial standing, which for us just means you're on a payment plan. You're making, progress towards supporting your experience. That is it.
That's
the
only reasonable.
That's the only requirement, because this is about helping all of our students lead the world and see the world. And I can't wait until we have classes back from those trips. How is our campus going to change when each sophomore class has had this distinctive life-changing experience abroad? I can't wait to see how our campus feels.
Yeah,
I know it's going to feel different.
Well, and explain, please, Carmen, to our listeners, what it means to be down there for a week as far as these students are. This is not a tourist week.
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, so, this for us is about a week of service. So, yes, will they go and see some things? Obviously, we want them to see the sites. But if you're working on, let's say, conservation biology and environmental issues, so they will be, yes, going and working with non-governmental organizations, learning about what the environmental issues are in Rio. We saw some of that in the Rio Olympics, mm-hmm. right? Some of the people who saw the swimming event saw what happened when they didn't do the right things about the chemicals there, some of the things that are happening in environmental issues. They will go and learn about those issues before they go. Then they will go and work with people in that region, try to see what they can do to help think about it in a strategic way. So this is really an opportunity to learn and grow and work with experts. We'll be working with folks in government. We'll be working with nonprofits. We will be going and doing a service trip that will allow them to learn but also engage. And so what I hope will happen is that the 10 to 15 small groups will be off doing their individual work. They will come back together some periods of time during the 10 days that they're there. But we believe in Cedar Crest. When we say this is a place where students learn to lead, we the caveat to that is that leadership is service. It's not positional. It can be, but it's about service. And
correct.
So this is what this trip is going to be. And this is not, so they can go, although I'm sure they'll go to the beach and see the beach, but this is not what this trip is about.
Yeah, no, that is so exciting because you're the only school doing that right now, correct?
We looked around. There is one other college that we found that was doing something similar, but it wasn't in the same vein that we were. It was something that happened in their freshman year, early on in the first few weeks. It wasn't connected to a seminar course. It wasn't a service trip. It really had to do with their longstanding relationship with another institution. So we didn't find anybody else that was doing this. One of the things that was great about the sophomore expedition, it was picked up by the AP. It went all over the country. We got so many calls about that. And I have to say, when I talk about that at our admissions events, I think every parent understands that, if you are sending your kid to college and it's pretty expensive, study abroad is an extra that a lot of people can't afford.
Correct.
Yet, it's becoming so vital to our students' ability to be competitive in this marketplace. And that's another reason why we wanted to try to fully fund it, because it shouldn't be that only the wealthiest students get a chance to enjoy the very experiences that can be so transformative on a college campus.
Yeah, that's incredible. What an amazing opportunity for those students. I'm anxious to hear what happens, how the campus changes when you guys get back.
I think it's going to be great.
Now, are you going to be joining them?
I think what I'll do, at least on this first trip, is my goal is to be there at the airport in Rio when they come off the plane and
nice.
Sort of welcome them to this special opportunity. And, the donor who gave us this gift was really committed to international issues, but it's also a part of what it means to be 150 years old and the work that we're doing to try to establish this institution that we hope will be here for the next 150 years.
Yeah, terrific. Well, and let's talk about 150th
yeah.
and what's going on. I know you've had a couple of events already.
We have. It's been a dynamic year. So we started off the 150th with the announcement of the sophomore expedition. Each of our signature events on campus have had 150th flair to them.
Okay.
So that's been really interesting. We're doing a series of faculty lecture series that highlight our 150th. We just had this really great conference called Visualizing Higher Education over the next 10 years. We had about almost 250 people at that conference. Some speakers that were doing just fantastic work on their campuses around retention and technology. And it was really a great service. We had over 80 schools represented.
Congratulations.
So it was really a fantastic conference, and we've heard a lot of positive buzz about that. The next big one actually is graduation. So we're going to have Molly Barker there. So for those of you who have been involved in Girls on the Run, she was the founder of Girls on the Run. That's just one of those really great opportunities for young girls to think about empowerment, but also to prepare for a 5K. So if you have a daughter who is in the third, fourth, or fifth grade, you should ask about Girls on the Run at your school and see if they have that. And then we're going to have a huge parade of classes. So all the classes will be represented for the 150 years, and each of those alums will walk down and represent one of the classes from our years. So it should be a great day, and it should be an emotional day because, 150 years is a real milestone. Not a lot of institutions can say they've been around for 150 years.
So when is this parade of alums?
So we were going to do that on May 12th, which is graduation, and that's the Saturday before Mother's Day. I hope I have the date right, but you can look at Mother's Day and see. And they will come down. Once we get to the podium, then all the class years will come with their banners and come down and parade in front of the students. And I hope for the students who are experiencing this graduation and the 150th, they can see those images of what they want to achieve in those alumni walking down that path. All of us need images to look to know that what we want to achieve is possible. We have some incredibly accomplished alumni at Cedar Crest.
Yes.
And I want for those students who are watching them to kind of see the future, that that's who I can be, that that's what I can achieve, and for them to know that it started at Cedar Crest, but they have a lot of good work left to do.
Yeah. Well, but the 150th activities don't stop with
they
graduation.
They don't. So we are going to go into the fall period because our 150th year is 2017. So we're going to have Lisa Ling on campus. So everybody should look out for that date. She's going to come and do the Reimert Lecture. And so she's going to talk about her experience as a journalist. And I think really give a great talk about this work that she's been doing around social justice issues and equity issues that I think has been really interesting in the work that she's done. And then in October, we're going to have this huge, just flat out party. I think that's the way to describe it, right? For 150 years old, you should have a big party,
I think
you should have a big party. So we're going to have an all-class year reunion. So all of our classes are going to come back. Everybody can come back for the all-class year reunion. And then we're going to have this huge gala, big tented experience on our campus and just feel good about ourselves, frankly.
Yeah, that's terrific. What a great year, great celebrations. Listeners, I am on this call, or I'm on the studio with Carmen Ambar, president of Cedar Crest College. We're talking about what's been happening at Cedar Crest College last year, this year, and we're going to talk a little bit next about what's happening in the future as the strategic plan had been just recently approved. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and I'm talking with Carmen Ambar, president of Cedar Crest College, and we're talking about what's been happening at Cedar Crest College in the past, but now we're going to talk a little bit about the future, Carmen. The strategic plan was just approved by your board, correct?
It was. So, it's so funny, Sally, because if you remember the very first time I came, I was talking about the first strategic plan at Cedar Crest, and that's how this sort of thing began of us meeting most of the time doing Women's History Month. So I'm now on my second strategic plan. I've been long there at Cedar Crest long enough to do a second one. Our board just approved it in February. And so first I have to tell you the title. So because I think it's bold but true. So the title of our strategic plan is The Aspiration of Others. And the reason why we chose that title is because we believe that the successes that we are having at Cedar Crest are significant enough that other colleges should aspire to do what we're doing. And it's a little bold.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's in keeping with who we've been as an institution. As I say to every student that comes to Cedar Crest when they're sitting in that admissions event, we do not apologize for brains or ambition here. And I say that to every student because I want them to understand what type of institution we are. And so we've never been accused of not being ambitious. And so we believe that we are the aspiration of other institutions. And so the initiatives that you see in our strategic plan, like the Sophomore Expedition, like our digital commons, like our work around adaptive learning, like the work we're doing in nursing, we say to other institutions, hey, this is such good work. You should aspire to do it too. So I'm excited about a lot of things in our plan. I mean, the work we're doing around nursing, we have been known as a really strong institution for nursing. Part of our strategic plan is a school of nursing and health sciences. That is our goal to launch a new school. We have over 300 nursing majors right now, so it's a huge major for us. In that nursing portion of that new school, we hope that we're going to get the Board of Nursing to approve us on April 20th, so in a few weeks. In that is a new nurse practitioner program. There's also a new nurse anesthetist program, so we will be one of the few colleges, certainly in this, will be the only college in this region to have a nurse anesthetist program. And it will also be our first doctoral program, our DNP. That's all part of the School of Nursing. And I just want to talk a little bit about nurse anesthetists just because I think it's important to mention why we thought that was important. It is one of the highest paid portions of nursing. So those nurse anesthetists oftentimes start at $150,000 or more. Yet, it's one of the few areas in nursing that's not dominated by women.
I was just thinking about all the anesthetists that I'm aware of, and they're all doctors or are men.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things that we've been committed to at Cedar Crest is not only our historic Women's College mission, but in pursuing fields where women are underrepresented and in making sure that women are in professions that support them financially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have to say that it bothered me immensely that
that
this nurse anesthetist, that there weren't very many women in this field, yet we have nursing, which is dominated by women. So it didn't take people long to convince me that nurse anesthetist is an area that we should pursue. But one of the things that's exciting about that is that because we're pursuing the nurse anesthetist program, you have to have a fully functioning operating room as part of your labs.
Wow.
So we are investing $2 million. We've already started that construction to create these new simulated labs, and one of which will be a fully functioning operating room, because as you can imagine, you need to be able to do that and have that type of facility for our nurse anesthetists. So it will be a fantastic facility. That should be finished in the next 6 or 7 months, and we will have that program. So that's a huge part of our strategic plan. We are also breaking ground on a new athletic complex.
I read about that in the paper this week. Congratulations.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. We've had really a doubling of our students who are committed to being student athletes over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. You can imagine, as I think we were just recently past the 40th anniversary of Title IX, all of the work that came out of creating equity in athletics,
mm-hmm,
has meant that there are millions and millions of young girls who now want to continue their athletic career at college. We think it's a huge part of leadership, the teamwork and work that happens on the field, court, and in the pool. And so we've been committed to improving our athletic facilities. And so we're going to break ground on a new turf field and a new clubhouse. And we're doing that on April 7th. And our hope and expectation is that that will be finished for fall sports.
This fall.
We're ready. They're ready to do it.
Yeah.
I'll have to say one other thing about that. So just so you know how students can have a really big impact. When I first got to Cedar Crest, I started this thing of having open office hours where students could stop by. The first student that ever came by my office, open office hours, set an appointment, and she came and she brought her laptop to a PowerPoint presentation. And her PowerPoint presentation was about the need for a turf field, the injuries that happen on grass fields, and how that was really detrimental to student athletes, and how she really wanted to have this turf field, and she thought it was important for the new president to think about doing that. So I just want to say it took me a little time to get to it, but here we are doing that turf field, and I think she had as much influence as anyone on making sure that I thought about that. So I just want anybody out there in an organization that's thinking about how you can have an impact on the strategic direction of an institution. You can.
As a student?
A student, as a staff member, whoever you are, if you come in with the right case and with the right data, which she did, and she made the case that she's going to be there. She is. I can't wait. Erin Ziegler. I can't wait to see her because she was an important part. So the Falconplex is a big part of what we're doing in our strategic plan. And then we have a variety of initiatives that I think are really about trying to shape the academic experience so we can be a college of greater impact, whether that's the digital commons, whether that's dealing with issues of some people have been reading about food insecurity on college campuses and what it means to be in college but not be able to have the food that you need to eat, or that's one of the interesting things that's happening on not just places like Cedar Crest that has 44% first generation, but on colleges that have these huge endowments. So we're talking about bridging the gap. How can you support students financially who may need a little additional support? So they range from these deeply sort of exciting academic units to support programs that make sure that students they have all the support system that they need in order to be successful in college. And I think when we finish this strategic plan, it's a 5-year plan, that we will absolutely accomplish what we set out, which is to A, be a college of greater impact, and B, be the aspiration of other institutions.
Okay, you mentioned digital commons.
Yeah.
What is that? What's
so it's
involved?
Interesting. There's two pieces, digital commons and adaptive learning. So, you know, one of the things that's happened to college campuses, and I don't know if your listeners have been on a college campus recently, but if you go into a college library, it can really look dead. It can, is anybody in here?
Right. Echoes.
Echoes. and that's just because this notion of stacks and stacks and stacks of books. It's no longer the way our students are getting information, right? And in fact, at Cedar Crest, if you go into our library, the first floor, there are no stacks. It's turned into a student success center. We have our academic tutors. It's like a thriving, vibrant place because we don't have stacks
and
anymore.
And you can talk there.
And you can talk there. We actually have these specially made couches that are sound barriers.
Oh.
So you can sit on these couches. It kind of controls the sound. One of the things that we do in the Student Success Center is have as many writable surfaces as you possibly can, because collaborative work, if you ever worked in a group of people, you know, everybody has their paper. They can project their work on the wall. So if you go into our library now, it's totally different. What Digital Commons does is kind of takes that a step further and tries to make sure that all of the technology is sitting in the library or digital framework, so students can really have connected integrative learning that spans the types of technologies that students can use. So you want to have the type of technology that no matter what device you bring, we can all work together on a project. You can plug in. So that's what we hope the digital commons will be.
Okay.
And it may not be in our library. It may be in another space. And adaptive learning is the other technology piece that would go with our digital commons, which is, you know, the way we learn is so different, and the way we teach students is so different than it was 20 years ago. And so there have to be different modes of delivery. There have to be different ways of engaging students. And adaptive learning projects try to encourage you to create systems that work for all types of students. So it could mean, Sally, that you and I are in this classroom, but it's not a lecture anymore. We listen to the lecture on YouTube.
Okay.
And we came in, and this is a project learning process where we are getting all sorts of videos sent to us by the faculty member, and you and I are looking at it, and the other team is in the room doing some hands-on experience. So the adaptive learning framework is to say to faculty members and to students that we want you to be able to handle any type of technology, to be able to adapt to different learning systems, and to not view the classroom experience ever again as a sage on the stage listening to a lecture.
Yeah.
That world is pretty much gone. And we have to be ready to respond to students. So, you know, that means that the faculty member is using an app. to send you the homework assignment and put you in the groups. You guys are using technology to connect. Someone may be on the phone. Someone may be on Skype to work on the group project together. It's really to encourage us to adapt the way we teach so that we're not in these classrooms anymore where you're sitting and listening to a lecture.
Yeah.
That world is gone.
Well, and you probably get much more learning in a situation where you can be more active versus passive.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I was just talking to our humanities faculty earlier today, and, you know, we are exploring right now, what does it mean to have a humanities lab, right? So you hear the folks in STEMs talk about that all the time, right? I'm going to lab, right? But this is a generation that is a generation that wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Everything I read.
Yeah, they are a doing generation. And so if you sit them in the classroom and ask them to passively listen, you are going against everything that they're about. So how can we reshape our disciplinary approach that we've been vested in for quite some time in academia, right, that helps them do? And you can do in English in the same way you can do in biology. We just have to find a way to do that. And so we are actually sending a group of faculty members to an integrative learning conference because that's that work. You know, we've been saying to people, our little joke at Cedar Crest is, you know, let's say we want our kids to eat pizza, but giving them flour and tomato sauce and eggs, it's not giving them pizza. So if we want them to eat pizza, we have to help them see how to make that into a pizza. So just throwing the ingredients out there to them. And that's what adaptive learning and integrative learning is about.
Very interesting. Well, you had mentioned with the digital commons, or actually even before that, with the visualizing higher education, you had mentioned some technology that you had seen in that conference that I'm sure you're going to want to bring to campus.
You know, whenever I go to conferences, if you go to the right conferences, you're always blown away by the possibilities. But I sat in this guy's conference, in his session. It was called Never Laptops. That was the title of his session, which was basically his notion that this generation of students will not use laptops, that they will be using only portable devices, either tablets, these high-tech tablets, their phones, that they're going to want to be able to take all of their data with them, that they're going to use cloud technology, that laptops will no longer be. So that was how the conversation began. And he just demonstrated new technology that is very light, tablets that are see-through, tempered glass, these beacon systems where I was just saying to you, Sally, off air, that I really want to use this for our tours. So what if a faculty member had a beacon on his or her door, and when you walk by, you instantly got sent a special project on your phone, you instantly got sent the video, you instantly got sent some new work that you needed to do. So I want to have that technology for our tours so that you come on our campus and you're walking with a tour guide. Yes, she's talking to you. And then she passed the science wing. Then you get a special video from Larry Carino, one of the top 10 forensic scientists in the country, talking about the forensic science program at Cedar Crest, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Because this is about interactive experiences, right? We all do better when we are interactive, when you have the moment to do the little survey and then respond and then have it talk back to you. You know, the triplets are 10 years old, and they were one when I got here.
Yeah.
And, you know, how they engage with technology is, you know, what is the world going to be by the time they get to college? And part of my job and part of our job as educators is to skate to where the puck is going to be, that Wayne Gretzky quote, right? So what is the academic experience? What should it look like? So by the time the kids who are 10 years old now get to college, that technology will be there for them. And that's what adaptive learning and our digital commons is about.
Wow, it's exciting. I was at a conference recently, and the thrust of one of the presentations there for me was artificial intelligence,
yes,
which really blew my mind as far as what's happening the next 5 years. Even,
right.
In industry.
You know, will there be hologram type? I don't know what it's going to be, but we better be prepared for it. And I think that this generation of students is going to demand that we are.
Yeah.
The sought-after institutions are going to be there. And if we don't find a way to be there, then we won't be here to tell the tale.
Yeah. It's incredible. Now, as you talk about basically aspiration of others, one of the programs that I have always admired that you introduced a few years ago was the Freshman Read.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody else is doing that, but what a great way to bring the campus community together.
Yeah, so our first year experience is a series of things, right? It's a large course that students take together, and then they break into seminar courses. They have an Exploring Your Futures course that in their first year, they're already talking about their careers. But one of the things we always do is we always have a first year read. And it's everybody on campus reads it. And it's kind of the introduction to the experience at Cedar Crest, because at orientation, they take their first course. So our orientation, this is totally Cedar Crest thing to do, right? So we're not at orientation just having fun, right? It's like, you got to go to a course today. And that first course is, the entry point is the first year read. And we always try to find topics around women, women's empowerment, issues that women have had to face. And so this year we chose Hidden Figures.
Okay.
And so this group of prospective students that will be entering Cedar Crest in the fall of 2017 will be reading Hidden Figures over the summer. And I would just encourage all the listeners to not just see the movie, although the movie's great, but to pick up the book, because you get so much more vivid detail. And I think for our students, having to think about women in STEM fields, having to think about issues of race, having to think about issues of social justice, about economic inequality, are all important issues for them to grapple with in the context of this book. And then they will have facilitators and they will talk through it. And then what I love about it is when you overhear some students talking about it when they're not in class, or you hear that that's a topic of conversation in the residence halls. You know, remember that learning happens inside the classroom, but it happens outside the classroom. And a lot of our learning happens from peers.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a way of creating a common language that everybody on campus can be engaged in. And then we encourage the students all through the summer to take selfies of themselves all over the world with this book, just so we can see the impact that Hidden Figures is having, you know, when a student goes to Brazil for the summer or wherever they end up.
Well, and I think this book, I mean, I had the opportunity to read the book before our getting together tonight, and it's just an incredible book, and especially even the foreword of the book with the author is just extremely interesting. And listeners, we're going to come back and discuss a little bit more about the author and the book after this short break. Carmen Ambar, president of Cedar Crest College, is with me tonight. I'm Sally Hanlon, and this is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon. I'm your host this evening, and I'm talking to Carmen Ambar, president of Cedar Crest College. And before the break, we were talking about Hidden Figures, which is the freshman read at Cedar Crest College for the coming year. And as I had indicated, I had an opportunity to read it, and it was the most fascinating book. But I got captured in the foreword of the author. I mean,
right.
And her name is Margot Lee Shetterly.
Right.
And this was her first book, and I was just amazed that this is the first book she's ever written.
Well, I think what's interesting about her is that she grew up in this town that I think sometimes when all of us grow up in a particular area, we just don't know that the experience that we're having may be unique,
right?
Because this is the only experience that we've had. And so she was in this town where there were all of these African Americans who were connected to the NASA industry. Many of them were scientists, were in these STEM fields, and many of them were women who had a very important role in the work of NASA. And it was only after kind of when she got older that she started having these conversations with her family and started talking about some of the more significant figures in their lives that she realized, wait a minute, I think this may be unique. Like, maybe this is not normal, sort of what I've experienced.
The world is not like this.
The world is not like this. And certainly when she started to talk about this experience with publishers and with people who were thinking about movie rights, it was this sense of, wait a minute, is this true? Is this real? Do these women really have this impact on the space program? And so that was really the impetus to write the book. And she did, and she, from what I understand, not only had just wrote a proposal for the book, but by the time she wrote that small proposal, had a book deal and a movie deal because of the significance of the story. So why do we have our students read this book and books like it? We're trying to do a couple of things. One, we're trying to help them expand the possibilities. And sometimes when you're reading a book where you know the outcome already, you can see the expanse happening. You can see the opportunities growing. And you can look at your own experience and expect that opportunities will grow for you if you take advantage of the opportunities that are put in front of you. So we have students read it for that reason. We also have them read it because we want them to grapple with the issues of race, grapple with the issues of gender and inequity, because in the grappling with those issues, you are better prepared, A, to talk about them in the present day, but B, to help your colleagues and others understand some challenges that you may be experiencing. I have to say that these books that we've read over the course of I guess now maybe 9 years we've done a first year read, I think have really transformed our student experience. And we've always tried to bring the authors or bring people. So people should be on the lookout for that. If we can pull off getting her here, we will try to do that, to have her talk about that experience. Because I think they actually have, just for those of you who have young children out there, they also have a kids version, which I think is more for maybe 10 to 12 year olds. So my daughter's reading that one now, and it takes parts of the more adult book and just kind of reshapes it for young girls that age. But Gabby, my daughter, is having a fantastic time reading that book. She's really into science, so I think it plays to something that she's really interested in. But for those of you who are looking for great books for kind of middle school girls to read, I would say get this Hidden Figures version for little girls.
I didn't realize it did that.
Yeah, it's really great. And I guess I wanted Gabby to read it because I'm always trying to put in front of her, just like all the young girls in my life, these images, to just so they can know it's possible, it's possible, it's possible. Because we don't want our children to be like Margot, to think it's unique, we want them to be so commonplace that it seems totally reasonable, right?
That's right.
If you see some of the interviews with some of the actresses in the movie Hidden Figures, and when they first got the script, they thought it was historical fiction.
Really?
Wow. Because
that's how hidden it was.
They yeah. thought, oh, this must just be fiction story. Well, because they never heard of anything like it.
Yeah.
And so part of what we're trying to do at Cedar Crest in particular is to put these images in front of our students so they don't think it's historical fiction. So they know that it's possible for them.
Well, it's very interesting, since reading that book, anytime I hear about the space program, you know, my frame of reference goes right to, this wouldn't have happened without those women.
Right. And don't you think, whenever you think about the space program before then, you kind of see the image of them in the control room.
Right.
And there are really no women there. And you just don't think you had a part in it. And I think it's important for sort of everybody out there, no matter what your background is, what your gender is, to see your place in society, to see that you're a part of the growth and advancement of this country. And that's what things like Hidden Figures are about. That's what historic women's colleges are about, frankly.
Yes, yeah.
To help our students see that you have a place and that you can succeed at the highest levels in whatever field you choose.
And the contribution is definitely something that's needed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Now, Carmen, you're talking about, you know, digital, you're talking about moving forward and students, you know, learning differently and all this kind of stuff. And so you're talking about the use of technology
yeah.
as a very integrated part of everybody's life.
Right.
But how do you manage, I don't want to say police it, but,
right.
you know, there's so many things that can happen when somebody's out there on the internet, something that will affect their future
right.
or impact even the college with the openness of the system. How are you dealing
with
that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we, you know, one of the things that's been interesting about the first year experience is that we've always done a nice segment for our students about their digital footprint.
Okay.
And we talked to them very early on about their digital footprint. And in fact, we go up and pull up their digital footprint for them so that they can, and it's been interesting sometimes. But part of the reason why I would say, and I would say this to any parents who have kids who are high school age, you know, around sophomore year, junior year, start talking about their digital footprint, because we help our students see that employers go to it pretty quickly.
Yes, they do.
And so, you know, the time to start kind of straightening that up, if you need to straighten it up, is that sophomore and junior year in college, because we want our students to be at the top of the list when they're thinking about who to hire for this position or what graduate programs, and your digital footprint is a part of it. So we spend time with our students talking about the digital footprint, pulling it up for them. We also have a Cedar Crest app that's really for our Cedar Crest students. And we, in that app, monitor that work. We can pull down things that are not quite appropriate so that they get a chance to practice appropriate behavior in the context of social media.
Okay.
And I just think that one of the things that I think that's good about a kind of a localized app that only your students can get on is that you're part of a community. And I think sometimes when you're known, you know, some of this is practicing the sense that just because you feel anonymous doesn't mean you are anonymous.
Right.
And so giving them the opportunity to practice this sense of I'm on the social media platform, but I'm not anonymous. People here know me, helps them practice what we hope that they will take in their life in general, which is that you're not an anonymous player on social media. You are known. And so you should act and operate in the way you would act and operate if everyone knew that you were saying this.
Yeah, provides them with the discipline.
Exactly. And so I think our students have done well on that. You know, I've even gone in. So I'll tell you one of the things I did when I, one of the faculty members asked me to do a mock trial, because we have our forensic science program, for example. Those students are oftentimes called to be witnesses when they become professionals in that area. So because I went to law school, they asked me to cross-examine some of our students. And they were pretending to be these experts. First thing I did was pull up their social media accounts and ask, how can we trust you as an expert if this is who you are?
Wow.
It was tough for those
students. That really took it home.
But it just goes to show you that our digital footprint is important. And no longer are the worlds where you can sort of say something in private on your Facebook page or on Snapchat or Twitter or wherever you may be. And believe that employers, graduate schools, anybody who's wondering, you know, what your commitment is to a particular initiative or area can't see what you said about things in the past. And
right.
It can be a tough lesson to learn, but the time to learn it is in college, not when you're up for that first job.
That's very true. And I know a number of human resource specialists that, you know, as you said, that's the first thing they go to is this person worthy of
right. Pull up your name, Google you, and see what comes up.
Yeah. Wow. Couple other things that you mentioned before our show ends. You had talked about the first doctoral degree that you're going to be having. Let's explore that a little bit more.
So it was. I have to say that, you know, one of the things that can happen when you've been at a college for 9 years is that you hopefully get a chance to experience these milestones, these moments that maybe somebody will be looking back on and think was a significant moment in the history of the institution. And so I can remember when our faculty voted on that particular academic program to do this first doctoral program. And after the vote, then everybody applauded, right? And it was just this milestone of doing this first doctoral program. So this is a doctor in nursing practice. And this is different than a PhD in that it's clinical in nature, too. So
okay.
you're not doing the dissertation piece, but it's certainly a doctoral program. And what's been happening in the nursing profession is that people are becoming more and more credentialed. And the DNP is becoming the sort of degree of choice for hospital administrators, for people who are certainly teaching in nursing programs, mm-hmm. For people who want to be on the same sort of level as nurse practitioners. And so we thought it was important to have a variety of options for people who are pursuing nursing at Cedar Crest. It's easier for me to say because I'm the president of Cedar Crest, but I think we have really the best nursing program. Our NCLEX pass rate says as much. I mean, mm-hmm. we have over a 94% first-time pass rate
wow.
with a large program, right? So we're not a program with six or seven kids. You know, we have a large program. And if you want to pass that NCLEX the first time, then we're the place to go. And so we wanted people to be able to, yes, do our master's program, yes, do our BSN program. But yes, if you wanted to go on to the doctorate level, you could do that. If you wanted to be a nurse practitioner, absolutely. If you wanted to be a nurse anesthetist. So we really want to be the kind of signature place for School of Nursing and Health Sciences. And the DNP was a part of doing that. And I have to say, the buzz that we've gotten, and people have called me about nurse practitioner, nurse anesthetist, and DNP at every turn, because I think that we just have this pent-up demand for a Cedar Crest program in these areas.
Well, and the combination with where you're heading technology-wise and the medical field is heading technology-wise, what a great blend of expertise.
Yeah, I think that you know, we have launched 4 healthcare-related majors during my time there: public health, health sciences, exercise science. I think that we will move into a master's in public health, I hope, soon. I'm sure that we will pursue some sort of physical therapy, occupational therapy, some sort of framework like that, so that we will be in that health sciences. It is, and when you look down the Department of Labor statistics and you kind of look at those top 20% professions, about 50% of them are in the health sciences, maybe more. So it's an area that's certainly going to be sought after. And the question for places like Cedar Crest and other small colleges is, are we going to be the place that's preparing those students for that workforce, or is some other institution going to do it? And we've decided at Cedar Crest that we're going to do it.
Well, and here in Lehigh Valley, if you look at just our industries, I mean, the health industry is one of our strongest.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have, you know, I sort of jokingly say to folks all the time, if you've been by any doctor's office or been in the hospital in the Lehigh Valley, I guarantee you've been taken care of by a Cedar Crest nurse. Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind.
So we'll have to ask them.
So, that's right. I'm sure you have been. But we want to make sure that we continue to be an important part of the industry here. We've always had strong people from the various hospitals on our board because we believe that we are an important part of making sure that the Valley is thriving and vibrant. And I think we've taken on that role in a really serious way, maybe more serious than sometimes liberal arts colleges do. But this is about liberal arts, absolutely. That foundation has definite health effects, actually. If you look at all the research around young women who are in nursing or young men who are in nursing who have a BSN, the health outcomes are better. But this is also about the practical application of the liberal arts, too. What can you do with this great degree that you have?
Yeah, and this will be in fall of 2018.
The DNP will be in fall. Nurse anesthetist, the CRNP is fall of 2017.
Okay.
So nurse practitioner is right now. When we get approval on April 20th, I'm going to speak that into existence. Then we will be going, and then the CRNA will be 2018, and DNP will be 2019.
Wow. Part of your strategic plan will have been met by that point.
Absolutely.
Well, and another milestone is, let's talk about capital campaign.
You talked about
having some surplus in your operating budget, but you've been doing really well also in your capital campaigns as well.
So it's been interesting. You know, one of the ways that we've been thinking about capital campaigns at Cedar Crest is we've been calling them bridge campaigns, mini campaigns. So we've been not a college that said, we're doing a $100 million campaign, we're doing a $50 million campaign. We do these little short campaigns, 2-year, 3-year, 4-year campaigns. And so we started a $10 million campaign, and in 2 years we had raised the $10 million. So we're basically finished with that bridge campaign. We will head into our 150th, having completed that. And so we'll be announcing our new campaign at our gala. So all of you supporters of Cedar Crest, get ready. We'll be back saying, hasn't it been great? Don't you want to support us again in the way that these college presidents do? But I will say that one of the things I say to people about Cedar Crest is that it is a worthy place to invest your dollars. And it's worthy because our students are worthy. They're worthy because they are oftentimes first-generation college students. They're working 30 hours a week to put themselves through school. They're going to be going into professions that help people and change the world. And if you invest a dollar in those students, I promise you that you will value the work that they do. And I think that when I talk about these capital campaigns, you know, yes, sometimes it's for buildings and for other things, but really what it's about, this is about investing in the lives of these students. Because when you invest in a student's life, you literally get a chance to change the world for good.
Yeah.
And that's why we do it.
And I know a lot of companies around that have had your interns, and they have been extremely pleased with the results of the interns.
Well, I think that our students, one of the things I say about our students, and this is not about any other colleges, it's really about what I experienced at Cedar Crest. But I hear people say this about young people sometimes. Well, they're not this grateful, and they're so demanding. And I hear people talk about this generation in ways that doesn't put them sometimes in a positive light. Here's what I know about the students that I'm around. They're so thankful for the opportunity. They're grateful to have this experience. I mostly hear from them, thank you, President Ambar, for providing this study abroad opportunity for this experience. They are thankful that someone believes in them enough to invest in them. And I just get the privilege of being their president.
Yeah, that's, well, I think everybody is just sort of reinforcing, and the college is growing amazingly well under your leadership.
Well, you know, it's a team effort. It always is. But, you know, it's easy to be in a place like Cedar Crest because the mission is so right. And I think when you're at a mission that appeals to your sensibilities and who you are as a person, then I think it's easy to go out and talk to people about it. And I think that the successes we've had, and I take that compliment because I think we have had successes as an institution, have been about our ability to go out and talk about this mission.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate WDIY for allowing us to do that because it's organizations like this that also have a great mission that's important for the Valley that has allowed us to send our message out to the world, really, to say that this is a great little college. We're in an important part of the Valley. We're going to be here for years and years to come, and we're going to produce these wonderful students who are going to change the world.
And indeed, I know that's going to happen. In our last few seconds, is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners?
No, I think that, you know, just being ever vigilant about helping colleges and universities, that they're an important part of the Valley. Yes, we're healthcare, we're also education. And so if you can help students, if you can support scholarships, obviously I would love for you to do that at Cedar Crest. But when you support scholarship dollars, you really help young people go out and do those things that we want them to do. And I'm not a first generation college student, but I am one generation removed from picking cotton. My dad grew up picking cotton. I know what access and opportunity can do to change not only the person's life, but their family's lives.
Carmen, thank you so much. It's been great to have you back here on the station, and we'll look forward to next March having
Excellent.
You back again.
I'll be glad to
Listeners,
be here.
Listeners, thank you for being a part of this evening's program, Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.